11 minutes past 8, the world has been reeling from Friday's announcement that US President Donald Trump will meet North Korean leader Kim Jong-un by May. Let's first bring in Joel Witt, 38 North, co-founder and senior fellow at the US Korea Institute at the School of Advanced International Studies of Johns Hopkins University. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And perhaps I can start by putting a question to you that has been posed by one of our listeners, 5263, asking, why does everyone just think that Trump and Kim will definitely meet, suggesting that it's perhaps more likely that North Korea will blame South Korea for some perceived slight and use that as an excuse to cancel the meeting and try to force a wedge between Seoul and Washington. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't see that as the likely scenario. I think the more likely scenario, if it doesn't happen, is that, you know, President Trump may change his mind because he's prone to making strong pronouncements and then gradually backing away from them. But I think the fact that the North Koreans made this offer and accompanied it by serious measures on the nuclear and missile front means they're serious about it. It's not just some ploy.
North Korea did cancel that meeting with Vice President Mike Pence at the opening ceremony of the Olympics. Obviously the Olympics here in South Korea last month. But is that a very different circumstance? It hadn't even been publicized beforehand, for example.
Yeah, I think it is a very different circumstance. And the fact is that Vice President Pence came to Seoul to make a point, and that's why he brought Otto Warmbier's father with him. He took a very hard-line stance on human rights in North Korea. And so I think the combination of that sort of said to the North Koreans, this isn't worth doing. So, yes, the United States needs to be careful in how it moves towards this meeting. But that doesn't mean we can't make our points, that we can't emphasize the issues that are important to us.
And a further point to make here, if North Korea's aim was to drive a wedge between Seoul and Washington, which seemed so obvious, then you would think they would just stick with Plan A, which looked like holding an inter-Korean summit, and just leave the U.S. out of the picture for now.
That's exactly right. I mean, I always laugh when people, you know, bring up the wedge issue, because, of course, that's obvious. They'd like to drive wedges, but there's a lot more going on here than just some feeble attempt to drive a wedge. They are serious about meeting with South Korea and also about meeting with President Trump.
And with that U.S. meeting also on the horizon, how optimistic are you that we are possibly going to break this cycle that we've been trapped in for, well, decades really, but certainly it's intensified in recent years with the development of North Korean nuclear weapons?
Well, I think we have to keep our optimism in check. But, you know, this is a very important opportunity for us to turn the corner with North Korea. And the next few months that lead up to the summit are absolutely critical. The United States, in particular, has to be prepared for this meeting, and we have to think about what our objectives are and what we want to accomplish in the meeting and what we want to happen after the meeting. And if we aren't careful, we could create worse circumstances on the peninsula, not better.
And having reflected on this now over the weekend, the word that keeps coming up in my mind is trust. It seems very difficult to achieve the level of trust that would be required to force that change that I'm kind of referring to there, for North Korea actually to denuclearize or for the US to actually back off militarily from this peninsula.
Well, that's also another very good point. I mean, let's not forget that the U.S.-North Korean relationship has been very bad for much of the past 60 years. Not all of it, but for much of it. And so we can't expect one meeting to miraculously change all that. All we can expect is that this one meeting will start steering us in the right direction, and then there are going to have to be subsequent meetings of lower-level officials, and then maybe more senior-level meetings. So this is a process that if we're really serious about it, it's going to take time and a lot of effort.
Even if we can achieve some huge breakthrough on the nuclear question, do you worry that we're leaving behind the humanitarian concern for the people of North Korea?
Well, of course, that's very important, and no one wants to ignore that. But, you know, whenever you enter a negotiation with another country, you have to figure out what are your priorities. You can't get everything right away. So I think there are very few people left now who would say we have to emphasize human rights over the nuclear and missile issues. Mm. Those two issues are the most important priorities. And then as we move forward, we can integrate human rights into this process.
A harsh reality for those campaigners who live for the human rights issue, right? But politically, it's certainly the realistic option. And even then, a challenging one, as you've emphasized. Joel Witt from 38 North, Johns Hopkins University, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And, I mean, we've had, of course, President Trump's hamburger invitation now months ago, President Moon's repeated requests for dialogue, and suddenly then all the barriers came falling down between us and North Korea in 2018, it's felt like. But is everything as it seems from a South Korean perspective? Let's welcome on the line Professor Park Won-gon from the School of International Studies at Handong University. Good morning.
Good morning.
And would you say cautious optimism also sums up your own feelings on this?
Well, I'm not fully optimistic at this moment because I believe there are still some hurdles that U.S.-North Korea needed to cross if they want to achieve some meaningful agreement for denuclearization. Although I'm pretty sure at this moment that there will be a summit between Trump and Kim Jong-un in May, but it is also true that there are some concerned voices in Trump administration that the U.S. should be careful for the summit. Probably you know that Press Secretary Sarah Sanders mentioned right after the announcement of summit that, quote, we've accepted the invitation to talk based on them following through on concrete actions on the promises they've made, end quote. So we are not sure at this moment the United States demands some kind of precondition to have summit or not, but it is one of the examples that negotiation between U.S. and North Korea is not going to be easy.
There's been this presumption that North Korea's been forced into dialogue this year after those crippling sanctions and military posturing, particularly by the US. But there is an alternative view that maybe North Korea's completed its nuclear arsenal and feels more confident than ever. Do you think North Korea's acting the way it is now from a position of strength or weakness?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. You just mentioned the proclaimed the last November 29th after they launched the ICBM that they complete the nuclear capability. And Kim Jong-un also one more time confirmed that in his New Year address on January. So it is quite controversial whether North Korea really achieved this capability or not, but it makes Kim Jong-un to a more bold step to have a dialogue, direct talk with both South Korea and United States. But still, I think some weak counterparts is also played to have this dialogue because of very tight sanctions against North Korea. They need to some breakthrough to overcome them. And we actually, I have a research with some of the members of the team that we estimate that at least before at the end of this year, we can see very clear sign that North Korea suffers economically because of sanctions. So I believe this is one of the reasons that Kim Jong-un wants to talk. And even North Korea themselves called it as a peace offense.
Yeah, indeed. North Korea's kind of borrowed the words that are sometimes used as a criticism of North Korea's own policy quite openly described their policy in those terms. But I just wonder if you can also share with us your views on how this will affect us here in South Korea politically. This is something that President Moon Jae-in wanted so much, but it's happened so fast that it's difficult for anyone to keep up. How do you think he will respond, and how do you think the US and North Korea getting closer together, if that does happen, will have an impact?
Well, the summit between U.S. and North Korea is very important, especially in terms of inter-Korean relations. As you just mentioned, that our president, Moon Jae-in, government has been trying our best to have a dialogue and to avoid any kind of military confrontation. So far, it is pretty much successful. But at this moment, I'm not sure whether we can have some meaningful result between the U.S. and North Korea summit, because without any meaningful agreement between these two countries, I think it is very difficult, if not impossible, to have a more expanded reconciliation between the two Koreas. So once again, the most important issue is denuclear radiation, and the problem is the North Korea and United States have pretty much different idea of this denuclearization. North Korea has emphasis on the so-called Joseon and Korea denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. On the other hand, the United States insists that denuclearization of North Korea. So that's the difference between the two countries.
I mean, obviously, when we talk about the possibilities here of best and worst case scenarios, they could be rather extreme, couldn't they? I mean, you go right from a peaceful unification all the way to full-blown nuclear war. But in realistic terms, what do you think are the best and worst cases that we can hope for from Seoul's perspective?
Well, best cases, of course, at least I just mentioned that the United States and North Korea share the same object, which is that denuclearization of North Korea. Well, the North Korea keeps mentioning that denuclearization of Korean Peninsula, that means not only get rid of this nuclear weapon in the North, but also South Korea and United States haven't had any kind of the nuclear-related activities, such as the joint exercise, and even they insist that the U.S. shouldn't send their strategic weapons, such as the submarines and the aircraft carriers, because they are doing kind of military readiness against North Korean threat. So if North and South Korea, North and the United States finally reach the agreement that really have a denuclearization of North, not the Korean Peninsula as a whole, then we will have a best scenario. And I'm pretty sure that we can have a very rapid reconciliation between the two Koreas, and also we will bring the high chance to have a peaceful kind of circumstance environment for the South, for the Korean Peninsula. But I'm sorry, worst scenario is that there would be a chance that there is no agreement between United States and North Korea. They just reconfirmed their different position, and then they haven't had any chance to have a continuous dialogue between these two countries. And then I'm pretty sure that already President Trump mentioned before that it will move to phase two, which is very tough and also includes some military option. And that is worst scenario for us.
Yeah, I mean, really what we've seen is just everything sped up, haven't we? All the speculation. Thank you so much, Professor Park.
All right, thank you.
Professor Park Won-gon from the School of International Studies at Hanyang University.